Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the January 2nd edition of Weekly Digest. I'm your host, Adam G. Blair, tonight from Lally, discussing the role for a winter warm-up and more. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. I had a good day, getting ready to head up to take.
Yeah, that sounds exciting.
It'll be a really good race. Qualifying this afternoon. That count. Find a way of testing. Qualifying it. Really cold up there. Really cold across here. You're standing. Snow and everything. Cold for Florida.
Okay, this is going to be really weird, but I think I have to call back because my phone connection is, like, really, really bad for some reason.
Okay.
All right. Well, sorry. Give me 1 second.
No problem.
Did I fix it?
Well, apparently we're having some technical issues this evening, but that happens every so often. Can you hear me now?
I can.
Wow. You can hear me, I can hear you, and the computer can tell that we're both here, so it's a good thing.
Yes, finally.
So.
I don't know. My mom, because I'm talking on my mom's phone right now because my phone is really dumb and I don't want to, like, have it reset again like it did that last time.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's phone is really weird. Like, sometimes the reception is, like, great, and then sometimes the phone, like, cuts out and stuff. So, yeah.
Apparently it's going to be a night for technical issues then.
I hope not.
So you planning on watching the Rolex 24 at Daytona this weekend?
I am. I'm so excited.
It'll be interesting. They've got the really weird broadcast schedule again. They have it starting on Fox for like 2 hours. Then it jumps to Fox Sports 1. Then I think it goes to Fox Sports 2. Then it's on IMSA.com for overnight. And then it finishes out on the on Fox from, I think, Fox Sports 1 from 7 a.m. until, like, 3 p.m. on Sunday. So.
Yeah, that's going to be kind of hard to follow, but I think we will make
it. You should. They've got 15 hours of full coverage on television, and then the other 9 hours will be online. I believe the entire race will actually be broadcast online on IMSA.com or on one of the other networks that the International Speedway Corporation has online, if IMSA.com is being weird like it was earlier. Apparently it's a weird day for the internet because they had their issues and we had our little share of issues here starting out the program tonight. But we can work through the bugs as long as you're still listening. So.
Yeah, maybe it's something in the air.
You never know.
Are you excited?
I am, actually. I think it'll be really cool. We've gone up there for the past few years now. We did the Daytona 500 Club experience like 3 years ago. That was something that's really amazing because you get to go and get meet most of the drivers who will be competing. You get to have your breakfast, lunch, and dinner catered at the track and unlimited drinks and all that. But that's a little pricey. They charge... I don't know what the price was 3 years ago. 3 years ago, it was a Christmas present. But this year, the website says that they charge $550 a person for those tickets. So, but you expect,
wow.
for that price, you expect to get to meet everybody, and it's really an amazing thing. It's the sort of thing you should do at least once. I've been privileged to be able to do that at least once. I also did the Daytona 500 Club at the Daytona 500, in fact, about 10 years ago. And I think the one for the sports car race is actually a little bit better than the one for the Daytona 500, even though I did get to meet Nicolas Cage when I went to the one for the 500, but didn't get to meet as many
cool
drivers. So. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
He's short. Nicolas Cage is a lot shorter than he appears on the television in the movies. But
that's funny.
All about placement, I suppose. So like Tom Cruise, who's really a short guy, but Tom Cruise, in some of his movies, he makes fun of that. But Nicolas Cage, I don't think he's ever really made fun of the fact that he's not a very tall man. So, but he wears a really big hat. Big hat to make up for the fact that he's not a tall guy. So, huge 20-gallon black hat.
How does that not weigh him down?
Probably the platform shoes help, too, you know. Anyway, this past weekend I went to the Pro Winter Warm-Up at Palm Beach International Raceway. That's where the National Hot Rod Association, their professional races organization division, sponsored the Top Fuel and Funny Cars to come down and have basically a practice race at the Palm Beach International Raceway. There weren't a lot of cars as opposed to past years. There were only, I think, four funny cars there, and there were like 10 Top Fuel cars, but they put on quite the show. It was really impressive. They also had the Larson Motorsports team, which we've had a few of those drivers on the program before, Lane Larson, Marisha Falk, Shea Holbrook, and two others who I don't remember, but those are the three that have been on the program in the past. So they finished off the evening, which is kind of anticlimactic, because if you see a Top Fuel car go down the track at 330 miles an hour, having a jet funny car or a jet dragster go down the track just at a little over 230, doesn't seem quite as impressive as it does when they've got all the bracket cars and then the jet dragster goes down. But it was still pretty cool.
I haven't seen a jet car. I know the track, it's about 140 miles from where I live, but they run the jet cars all the time. And we keep talking about going, but we never do. But that's pretty cool, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Top Fuel is definitely impressive. The fine cars are impressive. As I was telling you earlier, the insane part is the fact that we go, when you have that sort of event, especially the national events and as well as this one, you have the opportunity to walk through the paddock area and get up close to the cars and get close to the drivers and talk to them and everything. But when they're testing those cars, the fumes from the nitromethane is just overwhelming, and it turns the air yellow. It burns your eyes and burns your nose, and it's definitely a sensory experience, but it's always amazing that some of the crew guys are there just leaning over the top of the car and hailing the same fumes you are without any gas mask or anything else. And those are the ones you wonder if they're going to wake up the next morning.
Yeah, the last race we went to in Kent, I was probably we used to go a lot when I was, like, younger, and I mean, mm-hmm. we still go quite a bit, but it had been a long time since I had went, and I had, like, forgot about the smell of nitro and stuff, and anyways, we were going through Nitro Alley, and we heard John Force's car fire up, and my dad was like, oh, let's go over there, and dumb me was like, oh, yeah, let's go over there. And we go over there, and I'm, like, running away because, like, my eyes are tearing up and everything. And my dad was just standing there like, oh, it's all good. And I'm like, really? No, it's not. It was horrible.
And that was one of the interesting things as well. John Force was not at the event. He had been pretty much a fixture at the Pro Winter Warm-Up for the past 5 years. He had his own pretty much his own section because they put him further down near the end of the track where he could set up his whole motorcade of like 10 transporters and all the cars and everything else. But this year, because of the changes in his sponsorship and the change in the make of the car, he just wasn't there. And I think a lot of people were disappointed in that. But they did put on quite the show with the field they had. But it'll be quite the thing to see how that affects the rest of the season. Because, like I said, there wasn't as big of a turnout as there had been in the past. I think a lot of that is sponsor-related because there's been a fall-off in sponsorship for the National Hot Rod Association. And some of the teams don't have the money to travel to all the races. The same thing happened last year as well. So it'll be interesting to see how many teams actually show up for most events, whether they have a problem filling out the field, how many buy runs they end up with, and that sort of thing. I think it'll probably be an issue more towards the middle of the year than in Pomona in their first race. But you never know.
No, my dad actually had a friend. His name was Dean, I think. I think his name was Dean. No, it might not have been Dean. No, I think it was Dean. I don't know. He was actually our neighbor, and he drove a top fuel dragster, and it was called the Nitro Cat, I think. I don't know, okay. One of those, but the only race he ever really, well, that I know of, that he raced was the Nationals at Kent, and so I can definitely understand that it's kind of hard to, you know, get there and stuff, but it was kind of sad because, you know, he's got like a nitro dragster and, you know, you can only race one race. Like, I don't know. I think it's kind of sad, but it happens, I guess.
Yeah, it's really expensive to run those cars, too, because pretty much every run they replace most of the engine. They throw away a lot of parts. That was one of the things I noticed when we were at the race last weekend. They threw away a ton of spark plugs, pistons, rods, all sorts of things. I brought home a rod from one of the engines from the Don Schumacher Racing out of Antron Brown's car. Because it was just sitting there, and Antron Brown pointed at me and said, "You see those? Those are throwaway. Grab one."
Yeah, but I guess, you know, that's why you find sponsors. But, you know, like we've talked about before, sponsors are really hard to find, so really kind of almost a no-win situation.
And with drag racing especially, I think that there aren't very many owners because the John Force Racing makes up, what, four of the top fuel funny cars and one of the top fuel dragsters. Don Schumacher Racing makes up, I think, six of the top fuel dragsters. And without those two teams, there wouldn't be anything at all. And there's other teams as well that are multi-car teams, but those are the huge teams in the NHRA. And I think they sort of swallow up the sponsors as well. They have the bargaining power to basically dictate how much they're going to charge, and you're either racing with us, racing with the big guys, you race with somebody else, is not going to necessarily show up to all the races.
Yeah. But I personally find that, like, you know, and how do I see this? Oh my God. Like, John Forrest, you know, like, personally, I don't think. I mean, he's what, a 16-time champion, 15-time champion, something like that. You know, like guys like that, you really wonder if they really actually need sponsors, you know? Like if they really actually need sponsors or if they could, you know, afford to do it without the sponsors, you know? But I mean, obviously everybody likes sponsors. Sponsors make things so much easier. But, you know, you got to wonder sometimes if people like that really actually need the sponsors, but like I said, either way, I guess sponsors do make things easier.
Well, if you recall, there's an old saying in racing that to make a little bit of money in racing, you have to start out with a lot of money. And I think that's what the deal is. If they don't have a ton of money to spend through sponsorship and other things, they end up spending all their own money, and they don't make anything. So, not a very easy choice there.
Nope, you are right.
Well, I did get confirmation earlier that Jeff Stone is supposed to be calling in this evening. However, he hasn't called in just yet. He's running a little bit behind. Jeff Stone is the one of the co-owners of Kelly Moss Motorsports. Today they're testing at Sebring International Raceway. I don't know if they're going to be doing a night test, and that could be why he's not called in yet. So we will patiently wait for him. They compete in IMSA in the GT3 division for Porsche. They are not at Daytona. The GT3 thing has not been amalgamated into the Tudor Championship Series yet. And we'll have to ask him a little bit more about that this evening to see how he feels, if he thinks that that will spell the end of the Porsche GT3 Championship in IMSA.
Would you own a team?
Maybe, but I'd have to have a really big pile of money.
Yeah.
A few years ago, they had the team in NASCAR, one of the Camping World Truck Series teams, that was owned by a guy who'd won the lottery. And he won, I think, $60 million.
What?
But he had sponsorship issues. He had Ron Hornaday as one of his drivers. He was connected with Kevin Harvick Incorporated for a little while. But I think with all of the money that he had from the lottery and whatever, his team folded after only a couple of years because he couldn't afford to keep them running without the sponsorship support.
Crazy to think that $60 million was not enough to keep your team going.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they actually give you a legitimate number as to how expensive it is to run the NASCAR team, but it is pretty pricey. It's probably too pricey, because especially considering the cars, when it boils right down to it, the cars aren't worth much more than the car you drive on the road in parts and that sort of stuff, because they're not very technologically advanced. And there's not really a lot of amenities in them, so they may cost a lot to produce. They may cost a lot to maintain and a lot to run. But when it all boils down to it, they're not worth as much as they cost.
Yeah, one of the a guy I raced for like 4 years ago, he actually always said, I can't think of it. What was it? He said, you're never actually going to get as much out of it as you put into it, or something like that. That's not mm-hmm. quite what he said, but along those lines. And I was like, wow, that makes so much sense.
It's all relative to. If you end up with if you enjoy what you're doing and you have the money and you have the passion to keep going, it doesn't matter how much it costs. You'll keep pouring money into it.
Yeah, I know my mom gets mad at my dad because he's always like, oh, we have to rebuild this, or oh, we need to get a new body for the car. My mom's like, Mike, do you really think that you should be spending all of this money to do this and all of this money to do that? And my dad's like, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, he's constantly like, actually, we just had to order another Speedway magazine, and I'm sure it's going to make my mom happy. But he's always like, oh, Mike, well, check out the price of these pistons, or check out the price of that crank. And I'm like, oh, mom's going to kill you.
Yeah.
She says we overdo things. She's like, just like golf, you guys went out and you played golf every weekend. And she's like, and now just like racing, you think you have to do it every weekend? And it's like, yeah, of course.
When my grandmother, I think I've told you before, my grandmother, for a short period of time, she worked for a man who billed himself as Speedo the Speedway Clown, who traveled the country as a sprint races and that sort of thing, just sort of a halftime entertainment, intermission entertainment guy with a self-driving car and all sorts of fun things. But he actually based his yearly schedule on which track was close to the best golf course.
Oh my gosh. That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. If he's gonna go be a clown, he's gotta play golf too. I mean, I guess I kind of agree. Like, sometimes people can overdo things, I guess. But, I mean, racing, you kind of have to, you know, like, you have to put more money into it to be competitive. And you can't just race one weekend or you're not going to do anything. Like, come on, Mom. How long have we been doing it now?
Racing is definitely an every weekend sport, especially in certain series. NASCAR, there's a big thing of NASCAR news today that Jeff Gordon is going to be his last full-time year with Hendrick Motorsports. And one of the reasons he gave for that was that he was going to spend more time with his family, which is always a little bit of an excuse that politicians and other people use, but you never know. Personally, I think that he's leaving the sport on a high note. He doesn't want to end up like Darrell Waltrip, for example, because at the last year that Darrell Waltrip competed in NASCAR, he was basically competing to be the slowest car on the field. And there were some races where he was even though he was still running, he was slower than on average than some of the cars that started and parked the race, which is pretty bad. So it's good for Jeff Gordon to leave when he's really competitive, when he might even have a chance to bring the championship this year, which would be really good. You never know.
Nope, sure don't. And, you know, I mean, it's sad that, you know, he's not going to be racing anymore after this season. But at the same time, you know, he's been doing it long enough that he probably, I mean, obviously I'm not him, so I don't know. But he's probably calling it quits before, I don't know, like you said, before he becomes the slowest car or something. So, but I don't know. But do you really think he's going to, because didn't Mark Martin retire like 5 different times and then he came back and he retired and he'd come back? So who knows? He could be one of those people. But, I mean, I kind of doubt it. But
yeah.
It could happen.
I think Jeff Gordon is smart enough. He might come back for certain races. He might do the same sort of thing that Bill Elliott did, for example. Bill Elliott came in for the races he always liked to run. He showed up at Daytona. He showed up in Atlanta, or he showed up in Talladega and a few other races just because he felt like being there. He didn't necessarily have the best car or have the best setup, but he was racing and he was happy and he was out there.
Yeah, but I don't know what I was going to say.
I just sent a message to our guest, Jeff Zone, in hopes that he will call in shortly. You never know. There are some times when you end up getting distracted. I've had other guests in the past who have had some issues they had to deal with, but they ended up calling back eventually. So hopefully he'll be on this evening. Fingers crossed and all that. On that same note, I will be at Daytona this weekend. I'm going to be talking to a few different teams. I'm hoping to get some interviews done with some of the drivers. I'm supposed to contact the Mazda Motorsports team. I have a fairly decent relationship with the head of PR for Mazda Motorsports North America. I just met the new head of public relations for for Mazda Motorsports for their prototype team. He seems like a pretty good guy. He has some NASCAR experience, but he'll have to learn that the even though they are owned by NASCAR, the Tudor Championship Series is a lot different than NASCAR. They operate in different ways. They have a little bit different ideas as to how things are supposed to be done. And I wish him all the luck in the world. I'm also supposed to get in touch with a few other different people, and I'm going to contact the Ferrari people on there. Scuderia Corsa has always been really supportive of my efforts in trying to publicize the sport. I'm also going to get in contact with one of the Porsche North America PR guys, guy from Dark Horse Autosports, who's had enabled us to talk to Brian Sellers on this program on two different occasions. So, should be good. Who do you think is going to win the all-out Rolex 24 Daytona overall?
You know, I honestly, I don't know. Honestly, I think anybody could win it. I mean, they're all really good cars, so they've all got a lot of great people behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my opinion, I think it's anybody's game. Who do you think is going to win, though, is a better question.
Well, who do you think is going to win, and who do I think should be the winner? Those are the good questions. Who do I think is going to win is Michael Schenck Racing, because they have a really good group of guys. They have a bunch of driven drivers. They have Adrian Allmendinger, who's really, really interested in coming out on top. They're starting from the pole, which is a big help. But for a 24-hour race, it really doesn't mean anything. That's who I think will probably end up with it. Who I think should win, who I'd like to see win, is the Delta Wing car, just because it's different. They also have a great group of drivers there. They actually qualified in fifth this year for the race. And I'd also like to see the Mazda Motorsports team do well. Speed Source has been really helpful to me in this program and through my articles on SpeedwayDigest.com and before that with Examiner.com. And they have a great looking car. They were the first one to try and work with a car that they thought would fit into the new rules package that is going to be announced for 2017, but they have some reliability issues that they had to work out, and they still have some reliability issues they have to work on. So it'll be interesting to see if they're still running at the 24-hour mark. If they are, then they might be a force to be reckoned with, but it all depends on how they do throughout the night, whether they're able to keep going the whole night. That's the main question. And the weather might be a little bit of an issue as well. It's going to be, as I said, it's going to be in the low 40s there. There's probably going to be fog. And there's a wide variety of driver skill levels on the track. So it's sort of a game of bumper cars at certain times. Just how well you get around the track. Last year, that was one of the issues, too.
How many times each car switches drivers? Actually, do they have an option? Are they allowed to be I've been racing for 8 hours, I don't really want to switch right now, and then not switch until they're ready to switch, or do they have to switch?
They have to switch, but there isn't I'm not sure the exact time frame for that. I know that in the past, the racing stints had been 90 minutes, because that's pretty much the length of their average race. So I think they can do two, maybe three of those, but after the After either the second or third, they pretty much have to get out of the car and move on to the next one.
That's cool, though. I wonder, you know, I think NASCAR should try something like that. Be like a 24-hour race, just like the Rolex series. I think that'd be pretty interesting.
It probably would. It looks like our next guest is actually on the line now. So we'd like to welcome Jeff Stone, the co-owner of Kelly Moss Motorsports, to the program.
Hello, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty well, thank you. How's your testing in Sebring going?
It was really a good day. We had perfect weather, and everyone put in some great laps today. No off-track excursions, so we're happy we ended the day that way. Sorry I was a little bit late getting to you.
No problem. What is Kelly Moss's greatest accomplishment for the 2014 season?
Well, we won both the team and driver championship in IMSA GT3 Cup, and we did that with our driver Colin Thompson from Porsche of Bucks County in Pennsylvania, and had a really good season of that. And now we're off to a good start for 2015. We're going to be taking Colin on to Pirelli World Challenge, and we have a new driver, Jesse Lazar, that's going to fill Colin's shoes from 2014 and go for another IMSA GT3 Cup championship.
What made you decide to expand into a full season of Pirelli World Challenge for this year?
It's going to be the first year for that series, and another good opportunity to just expand our expertise and the intellectual properties that we've developed for the 991 Cup car, and take that to another level and try to win another championship.
What IMSA series will you be competing in this year?
We're going to be running both the gold and platinum class of IMSA GT3 Cup, which runs in conjunction with the Tudor series, and we'll be at Sebring with four 991 Cup cars and four 997 Cup cars, with the 997s, of course, being the gold class.
Do you think that that IMSA will actually amalgamate the series and move the GT3s into the Tudor Championship in a couple of years?
Well, I think, you know, certainly they're moving toward the GTD class was an evolution of the IMSA GT3 cars when it started a few years ago as the GTC, and now that it's developed into the GTD class, it opens a door for 2016 and Tudor being the FIA GT3 cars, which theoretically down the road could allow for the current IMSA spec car to become the next iteration of what was GTC, which we'd like to see that happen so that it would become a logical and economical platform to move up from the GT3 Cup sprint format for fellows who wanted to do the endurance racing, and doing it with a as-delivered cup car spec in a single-make series, but run with a Tudor. So that's what we hope evolves, and we've been talking to the series about that, and we'd like to see that because it would be a logical next step for guys financially to not have to make the big leap into GTD.
I know Kelly Moss Motorsports is basically a speed shop that works on different for different racing teams and individuals. What are the big projects that the KMM shop is working on now?
Well, we've always got some crazy project going on. We have a 55,000 foot shop in Madison, Wisconsin. My brother and I own and run, and it's a pretty broad spectrum. We do everything from building hot rods and muscle cars to exotic Porsche and Ferrari and Aston Martin and various other makes, and even motorcycles. We do exotic motorcycles for people. A lot of hand-built bespoke vehicles of all kinds for folks, for both street and racing. And right now we have some exotic Porsches. We just finished a rally car for the road that's based on an early 911, and be debuting that this spring around different parts of the country. And we have some other things that are still kind of under wraps, but some very interesting high horsepower Porsche cars that are going to be coming out on the show circuit before long.
I know you and your brother are basically big adventurers off the track. What plans do you have this year?
You know, we're kind of hoping to get back to Baja again this year. We've run the Baja 1000 five times, and that's a real passion of ours, and we really look to go back. And we've run it five times, and we've finished as high as second and as low as fifth, and we've never had the elusive win, so we're going to go back and try to tip that one off, and hopefully we can have some success, and looking forward to this November to see if we can get that done.
I noticed that nobody who's involved in the team is named Kelly Moss. Where does the name Kelly Moss come from?
Back when it was started years ago, the original founder with my brother was named Rich Miskalic, and his girlfriend at the time was Kathy Kellogg, and it was just an acronym of the two names, and it really didn't mean any more than that. You know, it needed a name at the time, so we called it Kelly Moss, and the fun part was we really didn't tell anyone what it meant for years, so we've gotten to hear lots of wild stories about who Kelly Moss was, and there's been a lot of different versions that people, you know, cast their guess as to what it meant or who it was behind it, and none of it was ever true, so it was kind of fun over the years to hear all the different variants of what people thought it was.
Mm-hmm. Now, Michael has a couple questions for you.
Go for it.
How did this family business come about?
You know, it's racing cars and motorcycles and building and engineering and designing vehicles is really all we've ever done, and it's what we love to do, and we had the opportunity to work together starting back in the early 90s on a factory program for Porsche, and we were the last fully funded factory program for Porsche factory back in 1994, and we just have stuck with it ever since, and it's been a great relationship for our family, and it's been a great business model.
Now, you kind of already answered this question a little bit, but do you do any racing of your own?
Yeah, really all that we do nowadays personally is just the off-road desert racing. Other than that, everything is customer-based.
Did you think you'd ever be co-owner of a race team, like a big race team?
Yeah, really, it's all I ever thought I would do. I never had any aspirations to do anything else other than racing and building cars and having a race team. So it's pretty much the only thing I've ever had a focus on.
So if you weren't co-owner of a race team, what do you think you would be doing?
I'd probably just be doing more engineering and consulting than anything else, because it's still a challenge. You know, the thought process is what I enjoy the most.
So what are some of the perks and some of the downfalls of having your own race team?
Well, at the end of the day, it's a business, and it's a very hard business model to earn a living in, and it takes a lot of personal sacrifice and a lot of time away from home. Fortunately, you know, I enjoy the travel, and I still enjoy the time on the road, and my wife gets to travel a lot with me, so that's a plus, and it makes it a lot better for both of us. So I think from that perspective, you know, it's okay to do a lot of days on the road.
I know you've run a few races in the past that were the IMSA races. You had Price Cobb as one of your drivers. Who was your favorite driver of all time you've had the privilege of working with?
You know, the best turbo car driver that I ever worked with to this day was Price. And he had just an amazing ability in a turbo car that I never worked with anyone else. You know, he was akin to Hans Stuck and was just really phenomenal in his ability to get the most out of those cars. We've worked with a lot of great drivers. Andrew Davis is a great driver and personal friend that's worked with us, as Darren Law and Jeroen Bleekemolen. There's a lot of guys. There's so many that we've worked with over the years that have all been really good guys. But, you know, there's some that stick in your mind that, you know, you just enjoy on a personal level, too.
I know in the past couple of years, IMSA's made some, had some big changes with their new ownership, basically, and their new approach to racing. Do you think they're doing a good job? And how would you change what they're doing?
You know, I think that they've had their work cut out for them. It's been a big change because there's fundamentally a different way of thinking between the two organizations that have joined together. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, they've had a bit of a rough go of it at times because they had a lot of personnel to blend together. I think they've done a good job of that. I think that it's an ongoing process, and, you know, there's been some recent shakeup that will probably, you know, sort itself out here in the next few weeks. But I think that the people that are in place now with Bo Barfield and Randy Hembree and some of the other folks that have been there for some time, you know, I think they're going to do a great job. I think they really have the series' best interest at heart, and I think they're very capable people, and I look forward to see what they can do with it.
You mentioned Bo Barfield. Do you think that he made the right decision coming to to IMSA from IndyCar? And how do you feel that IndyCar will be this season with their new management team and all that?
I absolutely feel that Bo is probably the biggest breath of fresh air, and I really feel like he's the catalyst to make the Tudor Series a great place to be in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have any involvement with IndyCar, so I can't really comment on that. But I'm sure they'll be just fine. And like I said, I think Bo brings a unique perspective as a driver and a competitor to the series that I feel very secure with.
I know you're testing in Sebring. Are you going to actually be at the Rolex 24 this weekend as a spectator?
I might sneak over there, but if I do, I'm going to have my sunglasses and hat on because it can be pretty chaotic, and I just would kind of like to watch from the sidelines for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it should be a good race, and I hope you have an opportunity to go see it. It'll be interesting this year with all the changes. It seems like the teams are adapting fairly well, and this year they all seem to be on a fairly level playing field, so it should be good.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great race, and we should have excellent weather for it. We had some weather moving through the area, and it looks like it's changing pretty much by the hour for the better. So I'm hoping we get by without any rain. We've managed to avoid the forecast for rain here at Sebring for the next day and a half. And I think it should be a really good 24 this year, and looking forward to it.
Well, good luck with all your racing this season, and good luck at Sebring with your testing tomorrow. And thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
Once again, that was Jeff Stone of Kelly Moss Motorsports. They compete in the IMSA GT3 Porsche Cup in the gold and other levels. IMSA does have a lot of support races that compete in all different times of year, and it should be interesting to see how they do this year. He has a lot of experience with IMSA, with all the different ownership over the past, basically, 25 years. And I wish him lots of luck. I don't think I've ever actually seen a Porsche GT3 Cup race, though.
Well, I think you're going to have to.
Apparently. They run at Sebring, but they run on, like, I think on Thursdays. And when I go up to Sebring, it's generally like a one-day thing. Get up there, because it's only maybe 2 hours from here. Maybe an hour and a half, depending on how quickly you're driving. So basically a one-day thing.
be great if drag cars were legal. You know how quick you could get to, like, I don't know, Walmart if you needed to go to Walmart? You could get there pretty quick.
There you go. But then you'd have to raid their auto parts section because they'd blow your engine right before you pulled into the parking lot.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very good.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool, though. Personally, I've always thought it would be awesome to be able to go 330 miles per hour legally. Like, how mm-hmm. cool would that be?
That'd be pretty cool. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, they had the guy from Wayne Taylor Racing. I think it was Ricky Taylor. Who took one of his classmates from the University of Central Florida around in the prototype car where they got up to like 150 miles an hour on city streets in Orlando. That's a little insane, too.
Yeah, that, you know, I mean, we talk about how cool it would be, and then you got people that are actually kind of doing it. It's like, oh.
Mm-hmm. They do have a video of it online. I'll look for it and see if I can post it to the Speedway Digest fan page on Facebook, which you can get to at facebook.com/SD Thursday Night Thunder, or search for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar on facebook.com. But he was going pretty quick, and all of a sudden they get caught at a stoplight, and he'd have to stop and basically shut off the car because it would overheat if it stopped at the stoplight for too long. It's kind of funny.
I sat in my dad's, it was an alcohol dragster, I was 12 or something, and I was sitting in it, and he's like, hey, you want me to fire it up? And I was like, yeah, fire it up. And he fired it up while I was sitting in it, and, you know, I thought that was cool, but you've actually got people driving that stuff on the street. Like, wow, not as cool anymore, do you think? But no, yeah,
ago,
definitely find that because that sounds very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably also look for another one. They have I remember they had a promotion when they first had the IRL race at the Walt Disney World Speedway. They had one of the teams drive their Indy car down the turnpike and get off and go to Disney World in the driving the Indy car. And that was kind of funny, too.
That's pretty cool.
Not a lot of spaces to, not a lot of room to grab in your pockets to get exact change for the toll booth, though.
And I don't think there's a cup holder.
Probably not. It'd be funny if there was. I know in they had a mock-up of one of the NASCAR cup cars at Homestead when I was there in November. And they actually have a thing in the door where they store like a gallon of Gatorade in some of the cars.
That's
I thought
awesome.
That was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always wondered, what happens if a NASCAR driver has to go to the bathroom or something? Or, like, any driver, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. I think they deserve go.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. They should have the Depends car so they can advertise their adult undergarments they're wearing.
Or they should work bathroom breaks into the race.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you end up with the sort of thing they had, I think it was last year at one of the races where Bubba Wallace got out of the car to use the portable toilet and Ryan Blaney stacked up five racing tires outside the door of the toilet so he couldn't get out.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and some of those racing tires are pretty heavy, too.
Mm-hmm. I think today is actually 1 month before the Daytona 500. So that should be quite the race this year. That, as I was mentioning earlier, it's not exactly the year I would choose to go because there's only a limited amount of seating. And it's going to be a difficult, to say the least, to get the seats that you want. I think they're kind of hoping that they're going to sell out because they've been doing all those advertisements with Dale Earnhardt Jr. But be different. I think next year will be a lot better. Next year they'll have the full 100,000 seats back open again.
Yeah, they should.
It'd be interesting. I don't know if we're going to do it on Saturday or Sunday, but we're going to go up and sit in the new Turn 1 grandstands there at the Daytona International Speedway, and you're supposed to be able to see all the way around the track from the top of the grandstands. So,
wow.
The bottom you still can't see much, but from the top you can see all the way around the track. So
that's pretty cool. Yeah, I told my dad, I was like, Dad, we're going to have to go to next year's Daytona 500. He was like, why? And I was like, because, Dad, we're just going to have to. Mr. Sinclair said that we should go next year, so we're going next year. He's like, okay, Michael.
The Daytona 500 is definitely an experience. I mean, heck, the entire Daytona International Speedway is an experience, especially for the for some of the races, like the sports car race that we're going to this weekend, where you get to drive through the tunnel underneath the track and see everything, and it's just intense. The first time I went through it, right in front of me in the other car was Lynn St. James, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds like you've had great experiences.
Hopefully this weekend will be just as good. It's going to be, as I was just talking with Mr. Stone there, the organization is a little bit better. The people who are in charge are a little bit more experienced now, and the cars are better set up because they had the problem with balance of performance last year. And I'm sure even after the qualifying this week, or today, with the Liger surpassing the Daytona prototypes, they're going to have people grousing about that too. But if they're all competitive, if they're all within a few seconds of each other, if every car in the prototype class has a chance of winning, then they're doing the right thing. And I'm pretty sure that Bo Barfield knows exactly what he's doing. He knows the best way of getting people involved. He knows the best way to deal with the teams. And it should all come together.
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
Maybe I get to say good morning to Mike Helton again. You never know.
Just walk around and be like, hey, good morning. Oh, I don't know who you are, but hey, good morning.
That's basically what it was like this past, about 2 weeks ago, when I was at the Royal Before the 24. He's a really nice guy. And technically, he is the head of the United Sports Car Series, the Tudor Championship. He had his big IMSA credentials around his neck. And, not quite as cool as the time when Mario Andretti was following us around the garage, but close. So.
You're like, it's a close second.
Yeah. Or the time when we saw Bill France standing in the back drinking a lemonade, talking to Tony George, who was drinking some sort of beer, champagne-looking thing.
You know what I've never understood? I've never understood why, you know, NASCAR drivers, when they win, you know, they dump whatever they have. But the Indy 500, why do they drink milk? Like, I've never understood that.
I could look it up, but I know that one of the first drivers, his wife said that buttermilk was the best way to make yourself feel better after a race. So he drank buttermilk every race. And when he won the Indy 500, he just naturally went for the buttermilk.
Oh, okay, so I was like, there's got to be some logic to it, and I'm just not seeing it, but mm-hmm. that would make sense.
Yeah. So like the Gatorade of 1914 or something.
Personally, I like ice cold Dr. Pepper after the races, but that's just me.
Yeah. So you have to have Dr. Pepper up and say you're ready to put a name on your car.
Yeah. I'm not much of a Gatorade person. I mean, it's good once in a while, but I don't know, there's just something about it. And I know it's supposed to be kind of like, I don't want to say healthy for you, but kind of healthy for you at the same time. But I think it lacks, I don't know, almost like Kool-Aid without enough sugar.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to wish all of you a nice evening. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out this show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I also invite all of you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. I'd like to thank Michael Mullally for staying on the line with me and helping me fill a little bit of time while Jeff Stone was delayed with his testing at Sebring. And I look forward to seeing all of you again next week. Have a nice evening.
Have a good night.